So these are the circumstances of 1919. Rudolf Steiner, who still had an apartment in Berlin in this time, and who would travel when he could from Switzerland to Germany, he saw what was going on. In Switzerland, he could receive accurate news about what was going on. In Germany, he saw the kind of trance that people were in. And he realized that the peace that would be formed would probably be a prelude to a far worse war, which he repeated this again and again and again. He said, the circumstances are one more generation and there will be war again, much worse. And he would say, in this time, Germany won't be spared. All of our cities will lie in ruin when the next war comes. The only way we can prevent this is by establishing a spiritually based social order. And this was why in this year, 1919, one of his most important tasks was trying to get Germany to take hold of the threefold social order. Early in January, there was a communist revolution in Germany, not as well sponsored or as expected as the one in Russia, but one that allowed for a period of time the city of Berlin to be declared a communist city, and especially in Bavaria, in the south, which is where Stuttgart and other important anthroposophical centers were found, the communists really took power there. And a revolution was led by a group called the Spartacists, led by two people, Friedrich Liebknecht and Rosa Luxemburg. These two individuals, about 20 years before, 25 years before, had run a school for workers in which they were trying to inculcate socialism, but they also wanted the workers to receive a good education and to learn about the world they were living in. They wanted them to be intelligent, capable people so that a revolution could occur that would have a really strong foundation. So they invited one of the best adult educators of the time to give courses to these workers, a man named Rudolf Steiner. So Steiner knew Liebknecht and Rosa Luxemburg very, very well. He said he would be happy to teach, but he had to be given complete freedom as to what he would teach, how he would teach it, and he did not agree with many of their principles at all, though like them, he loved the workers and sympathized with them. These were the most popular workers' lectures given in that school. People would come after 12-hour shifts of work and go to his courses. Sometimes he would hold courses at midnight for people who were on the intermediate shift, who work from late in the afternoon till the middle of the night. These courses were well attended. And in fact, the largest audience that Rudolf Steiner was ever to have in his lifetime was in the late 19th century, when he spoke to the typographers' union about the printing press, the history and significance of the printing press. 7,000 people attended that lecture that he gave. That was fantastic. If only he had had membership cards at that time, think of what our society would look like. So that's pretty amazing. Like, you know, 1/7 of the entire membership today, that number, heard Steiner speak. So he knew these people well, and there they were starting this revolution. And he said, it's not going to last 70 years. It's not going to last 70 days, believe me. They're going about this in the wrong way. You can't just, you know, feel, you stand before people and say, now there's a revolution, and that changes everything. It has to come out of a threefold impulse. And surely enough, Friedrich Ebert, who was the Social Democrat Chancellor of Germany, fearing that this revolution would spread throughout Germany, He conscripted veterans of World War I, gave them their weapons back, and called them the Freikorps, the free corps, the free soldiers, and said, take care of this. Do what you need to do. So they went to every city where a revolution had been declared and basically just shot anyone they saw holding a red flag or who looked suspicious. They, you know, murdered rampantly. Finally, they made their way to Berlin, and there they captured both of the leaders, Liebknecht and Luxembourg, interrogated them, very likely tortured them, and tried them very quickly, declared them guilty of sedition against the state, and shot them both, and threw their remains in an irrigation ditch so that nobody could hold a big funeral with their bodies present and start yet another revolution. And Rosa Luxemburg's body was not recovered for months. They're both buried today. Their graves are still visited by German socialists and German communists. They're considered very heroic figures who actually were less fiery and more thoughtful than they might have appeared, but the times pressured people. The times made ordinary people extraordinary, but also often made them act in a very impulsive way. And Steiner was trying to hold the faculty of thinking and trying to be reasonable and trying to find ways to work. He realized that talking to political leaders, though he got to speak to the Chancellor of Germany, the one who preceded Ebert, the one who caused Kaiser Wilhelm to abdicate and flee and leave Germany to go to Holland. Prince Max, who was very interested, had a long conversation with Rudolf and Marie Steiner and said, this is wonderful, but I don't really think we can do anything with these ideas. They're too advanced. They require too much change and transformation. Steiner said, what do you think's going on right now? Of course they'll require that, but it's happening one way or another. He finally despaired of talking to political leaders and instead went to those whose hearts he felt most kinship with, and those were the workers, the proletariat, as they called themselves, and spoke then to many labor unions, many socialist and communist groups, and would start by saying, I disagree with your basic ideas, but I think you will find that I truly sympathize with you as people. Hear me out. See what I can say. He would go anywhere. And that's why I say this was the busiest year of his life, because no matter what else he was doing, and he was doing plenty of other things, when he was invited to speak before a union, before any kind of group of workers, he would drop everything. He would go and speak. Ehrenfried Pfeiffer, one of his closest students at that time, known to especially those of you who farm, he recounted going with Steiner to a beer hall where the workers had invited him to come and speak to them, where they were gathered. And he said, and there they are all are drinking and carousing and singing and screaming. And Steiner is up there on a kind of balcony speaking himself hoarse, talking about the threefold social order. And Pfeiffer said, I don't know if anybody heard him but me, but I was listening. He said some things I'd never heard before. It was very interesting. And I could hear his voice growing more and more hoarse, speaking of which. Nobody thought to give him a glass of water. So I just nudged somebody and I said, could you please give this poor man something to drink? And the man comes up with a big mug of beer and, you know, gives it proudly to Steiner, who did not care very much for alcohol, especially if you wanted to remember past lives and so on. Steiner drank it up. An initiate always, always takes what is served to him. Always, no matter what. The man could have given him poison and he would have taken it at that moment. So, and I guess the rest of the lecture must have been fascinating, I'm sure. Steiner after a mug of beer for the first time, maybe in 40 years or something like that. So this was Steiner's dedication and intensity about doing this, realizing that the alternatives were either more of the same from the new Democrats, who were really the old monarchists in sheep's clothing, or revolution, Bolshevik style, which he said would do a lot of destruction before it finally came to an end. And anyway, was started by the same people who considered themselves to be complete capitalists, trying to bring something in the middle, because Germany was dismembered. Germany was being destroyed. The heart of Europe, the philosophical home of Europe, the musical home of Europe, the place where soul and spirit were cultivated more deeply than in any other country, it was being taken apart and weakened so that those heart forces, which are powerful yet frail, yet need support from the other two systems in our being, that they would be supplanted by tremendous forces of intellect coming from the West, particularly, he said, Woodrow Wilson, under Ahriman's guidance, was leading the world towards that with the help of the British and French, and powerful will forces coming from the East, from Asia via Russia, with nothing in between, nothing to mediate them. And he began speaking at this time of the need not only to change society right now, which he saw was very unlikely to happen, but could the next generation, these starving children, these children dying of the flu, could they in a way be educated so that they could bring a different future? So that out of their own experience of their threefoldness, the threefold social organism could arise in culture at large. He began speaking about this here and there in his speeches, and it was to fall finally on fertile ground. And we'll be hearing more about that in the next lecture. Now, what time is it, Sherry?
It is 10:40.
Okay, so I've run over by 10 minutes. Oh, we started late. Oh, of course. Okay, I just want to, I will end in a moment. I'm just going to read to you from a remarkable lecture that Rudolf Steiner gave. Well, remarkable. They're all remarkable, but this is even more remarkable. January 1st, 1919, welcoming in the new year, or we might say welcoming in the winter of our discontent. This is How Can Mankind Find the Christ Again? Now renamed on the internet as How Can Humanity Find the Christ Again? January 1st, 1919. These are just excerpts. Let me say it this way. For some time, especially from the beginning of the 20th century, to be exact, since the year 1899, as we human beings come and go about the world, we have been immersed in a new wave of spiritual life that is pouring into the common life of all mankind. And a modern spiritual investigator is simply a person who acknowledges this fact. He is someone who is aware that such an event has intervened in the life of mankind. This is the one fact. The other fact is this, that people, by the very reason of their present attitude, need a certain shaking up, a certain rousing, in order to notice that this wave is indeed pouring into their life. We might say disruption today. So there is a significant situation. On the one hand, the wave is actually pouring itself into life and is there. On the other hand, people refuse to notice it. They fight against it. And don't take what I say as mere imagery. Listen to this. Don't be, for the centers, the coherers into which this wave discharges, that which coheres this wave, it is just the same way as the electric current in wireless telegraphy. In this sphere, the coherers are human souls. So he's looking at us as though we are these batteries, as it were, that keep boosting the charge as the wires bring a telegraphic message. Rudolf Steiner and the telegraph? Yes, absolutely. That's what his father did. And Rudolf Steiner, as a boy, kicked out of school for a while, sat with his father, and learned how to operate the telegraph at about age 10 or so. If he had been in my class, I never would have let him back in. You know, media and all that. So he's comparing us to telegraph and comparing spiritual waves to electrical currents. For it is a fact that just by living on the earth as men of the 20th century, human beings are the receiving apparatus for what pours into life as I have described. People may struggle against admitting this into their consciousness, but they cannot prevent their souls from receiving the impact of the spiritual wave, nor can they prevent it from entering them. This fact must be examined more carefully. Various hypotheses must now be considered after our deliberations of the last weeks. If one asks, what is the most important faculty of the human soul in our epoch? The answer is intellectuality. And if today some people maintain, quite justifiably, that one should not just develop intellectuality, but also other soul forces, their emphasis is insistent because a modern person does feel that intellectuality is now the outstanding faculty, but that as it floods in upon him, he should not simply allow his other capacities to be stunted. It is because intellectuality does play such an important role today in this age of the consciousness soul that we are so frequently warned not to let our feelings become cramped. This is tremendously important. I'll go on with this lecture in other lectures that I'll be giving, but just think of this. He's comparing us to coherers, receivers, receiving electrical signals and intensifying them, that this is the best comparison he can give to spiritual activity. And here, very soon, in this wonderful center, there's going to be a workshop led by Michael and Deirdre Babich, I believe, on 5G, on the latest step in electrical wave technology that does everything possible to supplant the spiritual wave technology that Steiner's describing. I don't think it's a coincidence that he's bringing these two things together, and that this comes at a time that he realizes this is going to affect social life, that the social life of human beings must be understood like a bunch of telegraph boosters. Okay, let me stop here. Now we have their snack offered in the cafe. Is that true?
Open for drinks and yeah. Desserts
and whatever. And I'll be there if you. What time? Shall
it's
we say?
Quarter to 11. You need a bit of a break.
Let's say a quarter after 11. So you all need a break too. I've been hurling a lot at you. I apologize. But as I say, this is 12 months of lectures in condensed in four. This was the one I made light, you know, kind of light content. But anyway, I will try to conserve my voice a bit. But, you know, if you want to chat at a whisper level in snack. And also, we will have a question and answer time at the end of the next lecture. And I'll be happy to continue those questions and answers at lunchtime, too. You know, if you want to stay on and we'll support the cafe a bit, and I'll be there. Okay, great. Thank you.